Welcome back to the Forbidden News Update. I'm Chris Matthew, and with me as usual is Corey Hughes. Corey, how you doing today?
Good. Happy Martin Luther King Day. Still muted?
I can't hear you here.
No, I think I'm good.
Hold on. There we go. I had something turned on. All right, now we're working. Well, today's live stream is going to be taken immediately off of YouTube due to the nature of our discussion. The video will be exclusively on Rockfin on Beyond Classified, which is our new show. The audio will be available for free on all our podcast platforms, though. A lot has happened since our last update, and unfortunately, that update was removed from YouTube as well. If you've been watching or listening to the show last year or even before, you know that myself and many of my guests have been warning you about everything you're seeing outside your homes, on your streets, destroying your small businesses, and stripping away all your freedoms. And it's not a pandemic. It's a war on us. It's a war on humanity, on our sovereignty. It's a small group of powerful people that want absolute control. This live stream may even be pulled as we broadcast. So who knows? Corey, looking back on last year, did you think that we'd ever get to this point, the point that we're at now, where everything is extremely 1984?
Well, I knew the day was coming. I just didn't know when. I never thought it would be this lifetime, really. I figured it would be the next generation who would be targeted by this kind of overt fascism, which is exactly what it is. It's fascism that's wrapped in the cloak of public safety. And, you know, this is much like the themes that were put forth in the film V for Vendetta. So was that just more, you know, government foreshadowing or what? Who knows?
Yeah, it's very eerily similar. And like I said, this live stream is not going to be on YouTube because the topics we're going to cover today, they're pulling immediately. And I may just have a few word substitutions that I might be using, but you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I just pulled a few stories that I think are important to discuss right now. According to Norwegian Medicines Agency, as of the 14th of January, there had been 23 deaths associated with getting a Pfizer jab so far. The agency's chief physician, Sigurd Hortermo, added that common adverse reactions to the mRNA jab, such as fever and nausea, may have contributed to a fatal outcome in some frail patients. The agency added that because the country is jabbing the elderly and those in nursing homes with serious underlying issues, it is expected that deaths close to the time of the jab may occur. This article states that elderly or not, a certain amount of people in the population getting vaccinated would be expected to die by chance in that period. And of course, they go on to say that this doesn't necessarily mean that this jab caused the deaths. According to the Norwegian Medicines Agency, the most up-to-date figure was, it was told as of the 17th of January, it had received 33 suspected adverse drug reactions with fatal outcomes. It added that adverse reactions were reported on suspicion, and the reports describe events that have occurred after being jabbed. The Norwegian Institute of Public Health has now advised that frail or terminally ill patients, an evaluation should take place whether the benefits of the jab outweigh the risk of potential adverse reactions. The agency's medical director, Steinar Madsen, told the British Medical Journal that there is no certain connection between the deaths and the jab. Now, at the same time, according to the sources of the vaccine itself, scientists don't even know if getting this will stop you from spreading it. According to Pfizer and Moderna, the jab authorized in the U.S. are approximately 95% effective at preventing people from getting sick with symptoms. The companies that produce them, of course, are still studying, but scientists are unsure whether it prevents transmission to others. Now, I thought that would be the whole purpose of a vaccine, right, Corey? Wouldn't it be to prevent the transmission of a disease?
That is correct. When you look through the CDC's own definitions of what a vaccine is, this new mRNA encoding technology that they're using is not technically a vaccine. It's a medical device, but they're calling it a vaccine because then it can usurp the laws and kind of slide under the radar, when the reality is that the CDC and these other organizations have very clear and distinct definitions of what vaccines are. And this is not a vaccine by definition.
Right. And, you know, might as well call it what it is. We've there's not enough evidence, according to these scientists, whether these vaccines prevent asymptomatic infection. Some research suggests without this jab, roughly a quarter of COVID-19 transmissions resulting from asymptomatic spread. There's some indication that the vaccine may reduce asymptomatic infection, resulting in reduced transmission. Now, they went on to say precautions will be necessary until the U.S. gets closer to herd immunity. Of course, wearing masks, social distancing, and avoiding crowded spaces are likely to be necessary for some time. Reaching herd immunity is partly dependent on enough people opting to be jabbed. Herd immunity is, of course, at the point which enough people are immune to a disease to make it the spread unlikely. They're saying that 75 to 80% of the U.S. population needs to be immune to COVID-19 to reach herd immunity. Even if jabs don't prevent transmission completely, they can still help populations achieve herd immunity if enough people take them. So that's the guise they're going under, according to the CDC and these mainstreams, that they're using the vaccination and combined with herd to achieve this herd immunity, which none of it makes sense. We've already had so many adverse reactions. For me personally, you would have to actually kill me before I am getting jabbed with this thing. I don't know about any of you, but there is no way in hell that you're going to put this experiment inside my blood. That's what it is. It's an experiment on humanity. And Corey, you and I were discussing this the other day, how it goes against the Nuremberg Code, right?
Correct. So one of the allegations against the Nazis was that they experimented on people, which is only a half truth. We're not going to talk about that today. The reality is, after the war, they, as part of the Nuremberg Code, you were not allowed to experiment on people. If you're going to do medical experimentation, it has to be done on animals first before it gets to people. And that wasn't done here. This went directly to human trials, right? So there was never any animal testing. Thus, it is a violation of the Nuremberg Code. It's a war against humanity. It's a crime against humanity.
It is, just exactly like I said. Moving on to our next crime against humanity. Sweeping online censorship, which includes Amazon's removal of the popular conservative site Parler, is becoming what many consider a major threat to free speech and expression. But involving companies that have grown so big, they're swallowing businesses and they're destroying our country. The big tech world of Amazon, Facebook, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Twitter, they all continue to move forward with these what most people would consider unconstitutional actions because they're private companies. And the First Amendment applies to government censorship of free speech expression and not with what private businesses can do. In the past week, most of the media have been quick to point out that the moves by big tech and others is not a violation of First Amendment rights. Well, if big tech now controls all media, social media, all major platforms where information and freely expressed thoughts have been coming from, we might as well just wipe our asses with the Constitution and throw it away. Because we're now completely monitored and controlled by these entities at all times. If you agreed to their terms and conditions, if you've read the latest terms and conditions to many of these platforms, They have access to everything on your device, your microphone, your camera, your pictures, your notes, everything on your device. And they know where you are. They know what you're doing. They are in control of you now. But we have no right to say what we think or feel or spread any kind of information, any kind of truth, because they're in control now. And you signed your life over if you're using any of these platforms. What do you think about that, Corey?
The thing that really gets me is the level of antitrust violations.
Can you mute?
There are currently lawsuits against Facebook, Twitter, Google, all these sites from 48 different states, okay? Plus the EU, numerous countries around the world are suing all these companies for antitrust violations. Now, an antitrust violation, just to give you an example, back in the day, Microsoft used to bundle Internet Explorer. Well, they still do. They had bundled Internet Explorer with their operating system. And back in the 80s or early 90s, that was found to be an antitrust violation because you're usurping the competition of web browsers, right? Nobody has a chance if you're the only operating system and you have a browser built in. There's no, you know, it kills the possibility of competition. And so that's exactly what you have going on right now. And honestly, what they did to Parler is absolutely unreal. That is, Parler is going to win their lawsuit against Amazon. Amazon violated the contract that they had specifically with Parler, which gave them 30 days. They pulled the site within 30 hours of notifying them that there was a violation. But this comes down to like how they really are going to censor the internet, and that's by having hosts dump people from their web servers. And the bottom line is, like, nobody should be using Amazon web servers. Nobody. Large corporations are incentivized to. They're given extremely good pricing, better than all the competition, for Fortune 500 companies to use Amazon servers as their primary servers. And the reality is, they have a $600 million deal with the CIA. I have no doubts that every single website and every single bit of data stored on Amazon servers, the CIA has a backdoor to. And then when they engage in antitrust activities like this, it just stomps on the very idea of free speech and competition and all of that stuff. Parler really was not a threat to Twitter. They're not. I mean, nobody is a threat to any of these large companies. These are the companies that these tech companies run the world. So when they go after a company like this for alleged violations, which actually, if you read the lawsuit, there were no violations. this is outright censorship because the world is controlled by a small group of people. We all know who they are. And they don't want you saying anything that contradicts the narrative.
You're exactly correct. What's most disheartening about this whole thing for me right now is that so many are just letting this steam roll over them. So many are okay with it, not standing up for their own rights, their own sovereignty. I know that there has to be some powerful people out there with the means and money to stand up and try and make a difference. If they are, we're not hearing from them. We're not hearing about it. I know everyone remembers last year how much we warned about everything that's happening right now happening. And, you know, I can't even believe we've gotten to the point that we are right now so quickly. It's certainly happening a lot faster than I expected. And something that I believe 2020 taught us more than anything is you can't put your faith in any leaders. An entire movement, millions of people, the QAnon movement, were misled that they would be saved by the orange one. Now, none of these people at the top care about you. If 2020 taught us anything, it should have taught us that we're on our own. It's up to us. And all I can say is welcome to the New World Order. We're here, and we allowed it to get there. So it's only up to us to get us out of here, because I'm sorry, the orange one, he didn't come through for you Q guys. I don't know what to say about that. But any thoughts on that before I move on to my next story?
It was an obvious psyop from the beginning. It was, I mean, really, like, disinformation, remember, is always spread by telling half-truths. And that's exactly what Q did. Q spread a bunch of bullshit and a bunch of half-truths. that was another one of those things that just screamed PSYOP from day one. You know, like that's why I emphasize to everyone, you need to, everybody really needs to go back and take a week and just study some of the OSS documents and read some of the books about the OSS and psychological warfare, because when you come to really understand psych warfare, you can spot it a mile away because they never change the script. You know, it's all the same tactics and techniques they're using today that they used back in the Holocaust bullshit. So, and the biggest thing is they own the media, right? The OSS documents openly talk about the BBC being a great place to assist in the mission, right? So the BBC has been compromised since day one. Same thing with CBS, NBC, and ABC. Those were the first three to get compromised. Nowadays, they have everybody. You know, Fox News and MSNBC is all CIA disinformation. Why do they have two different opposing news stations? Because they want to release conflicting information to keep you bewildered and confused. You know, that's the whole point. So, yeah,
you're exactly correct. And I think right now more than ever, we need to support independent media platforms. We have moved our secondary show beyond classified to an awesome new platform, decentralized, censorship-free. You guys really need to check out Rockfin. We have some amazing, all of our premium content is up there already. I think there's over 40 shows up there. You can go and check it out. And so much important information that you will unfortunately no longer be able to get here on YouTube. You can still listen to all of our podcasts. They are all still there because fortunately podcasts haven't been censoring like some of these other video platforms. So like I said, you can get all this information on from the podcast, or you can check us out on Rockfin. They got some good platforms coming out. It's just a matter of, can they sustain with all this crackdown of everything else that's going on? The last thing I really have talked about today is what it's just, it's funny to me. I don't understand it. And I don't trust it. When President Trump signed the $2.3 trillion coronavirus relief and government funding bill into law in December, it also began a 180-day countdown for U.S. intelligence agencies to supposedly disclose what they know about UFOs. The director of national intelligence and secretary of defense have little less than 6 months now to provide the Congressional Intelligence and Armed Service Committee with an unclassified report about unidentified aerial phenomenon. It's a stipulation that was tucked into the committee comment section of the Intelligence Authorization Act for fiscal year 2021. The report must contain detailed analysis of UFO data intelligence collected by the Office of Naval Intelligence, the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force, and FBI, according to the Senate Intelligence Committee's directive. It should also describe in detail an integrated process for ensuring timely data collection and centralized analysis of all unidentified aerial phenomena reporting from the federal government, and designate an official responsible for that process. Finally, the report should identify any potential national security threats posed by UFOs and assesses whether any of the nation's adversaries could be behind such activity. The Pentagon released three short videos in April, of course, last year, showing the unidentified aerial phenomenon clips that the Navy had previously confirmed were real, quote unquote. In August, the Pentagon announced that it was forming a task force to investigate the UAPs. The Senate Intelligence Committee voted last June to have the Pentagon and intelligence community provide a public analysis of the encounters. Now, as I've said before, I don't trust anything that comes from our own government or media, so why would I trust what they're telling us about UFOs and aliens of all things? And why the urgency now? Why does Trump feel the urgency to sign this into this bill? Now, already thousands of documents from the CIA on UFOs were released this week in a document dump, and it is all available on the Black Vault. If you're not familiar, it is a website which is an online archive of declassified government documents created by John Greenwald. So you can go there, you can check out all the wonderful new documents that have been released. I'm sure there will be plenty of information from UFO researchers and plenty of people coming out in the next weeks and months to come. So I'm interested to see what's in there, just as, you know, as a, from a researcher standpoint, but I still don't trust the fact that now and why, and it's the government that's releasing this information. I know you're not big on the UFO thing, Corey, but what are your thoughts about that?
Hard to say. It's not like the information is so overflowing from the government on UFOs that they have to tell us, right? It's not like some of the Kennedy stuff that they have to actually justify, you know, because they've released too much information. There's nothing like that going on. So I don't see any kind of real pressure for them to release anything. Who do you have really lobbying for this stuff? You got MUFON, you got a couple independent researchers, but there's no large scale lobby for the UFO community. So what's the
well, according to the story, members of Congress are extremely interested in the phenomenon.
I'm sure they are. I don't buy that for a second. It doesn't make any sense. The congressmen do what they're told. They don't fucking have an original thought in their fucking head at all. So I have no idea why this is coming now. Does this correlate to like the fake alien invasion, you know, that people have talked about? Who knows? Does this involve, you know, coronavirus in some way? Who the hell knows? We live in a world of fiction, right? We are living in a novel, okay? Nothing that's going on in politics or government is what people think it is. It is all one big psyop. So who the hell knows? You know, that's why like I don't really delve into the broader, you know, U.S. government, Pentagon, CIA conspiracies in general. For me, I like to focus on specific areas of history. And of course, you have those organizations like just stitched into the fabric of it. But, you know, my focus is mostly Kennedy, and it's going to have to be Martin Luther King here very shortly, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit.
Yeah, we can actually get to that now. That was the last of my stories. The only thing that I just want to emphasize to everyone is the urgency to rely on yourself. You know, you're going to have to get some emergency food. You're going to have to rely on yourself to take care of your own self for financial purposes, to, you know, keep a roof over your head. There's going to be some, it's going to be rough times. Lots of people are losing their jobs right now. Big tech is cracking down, and a lot of people that used to have outlets like this, they no longer have voices, and they're struggling. They're struggling to get any information out there. So, you know, like I said earlier, please support these new upcoming independent platforms. It's going to be the only way that we're going to be able to get any information out, because as they come up, they're going to try and shut them down like they did with Parler. And then there's going to be, you know, could be years of legal processes before anything gets done. But they do exist, these alternative platforms. The information's out there. You just have to go out and support it and support each other during these times, because we need it. We just need each other right now more than anything. And Corey, I'll go ahead and turn this over to you. You have some interesting information about MLK Day.
Yes, today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And so, as usual, the official story is not correct. And I have a theory that many Martin Luther King assassination researchers would say is controversial, to say the least. They'd probably say it's bullshit. But from what I found in my Kennedy research, no one else has been able to pinpoint Jack Valente as the Grassy Knoll shooter. So really, I have about zero respect for any of the Martin Luther King researchers out there who think that Raul was a figment of someone's imagination. So let me go ahead and screen share.
All right, we got it.
All right. So, all right. I called this the MLK-JFK connection. Did Jack Valente strike again? And my theory, which I have not had time to dive into, my theory is that Jack Valente was also the shooter of Martin Luther King. And that I can't say I'm firmly concluded on that. And I may be mistaken. However, there's just too many weird coincidences and overlaps and little tiny pieces of evidence that actually do interlock between Martin Luther King and the Kennedy assassination. And that we will find that path flows through a guy named Vincent Caltagirone Jr., who I believe is the real Raul. So
now, would you say that if anything, Valenti has a strong connection to the MLK assassination?
Oh, without a doubt. The problem that I'm having is I have not had the time to try to correlate Jack Valenti's travels with the assassination. I have about 150 pages of WikiLeaks dumps on Jack Valenti and his travels on behalf of the MPAA. And of course, his two points of contact when he was out of the country were Henry Kissinger and Richard Helms in the 1970s. Those were the two most important people in American intelligence. And so when your contacts are not some, you know, schmo handler, when you are talking directly to Richard Helms and Henry Kissinger as your handlers, you could not be more important. And so Jack Valenti was handled as such as he traveled around the world throughout the 70s and early 80s on behalf of the MPAA. He always seemed to go to places that were having some sort of uprising or CIA involvement, like Peking in 71, and he went to the Soviet Union in 74. I mean, the guy was all over the place at times when we were troubled. I have a feeling that he was a whole lot more than just the head of the MPAA. I do believe that he was an assassin. I also believe he was a diplomat who would do CIA covert meetings on under the guise of meetings over movies. So as the 1970s progressed, the King conspiracy theories became accepted by a majority of Americans, especially after Senate inquiries into the activities of the FBI disclosed that FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover had carried out a vendetta against the civil rights leader in the 1960s. The many discrepancies, anomalies, contradictory witness statements, and rumors that others had been involved in the crime gave sufficient reason to reinvestigate the case. In the mid-1970s, the United States House of Representatives initiated a congressional investigation into the assassination of Dr. King, concluded in 79 that James Earl Ray had been the assassin, but there was a likelihood he had been part of a conspiracy which had been planned by a group of right-wing Southerners. This is a theme that you'll find throughout all these government investigations, is that, in the end, they'll find that, yes, the lone assassin did do it, but there was probably more people involved. And that's as far as they ever go. You know, it's really a disservice to the American people. So this article here I found in the JFK files, and basically it says link between deaths of JFK and King claimed. This comes from a lawyer named Bernard Fensterwald Jr. Now, Bernard Fensterwald Jr., I should really do a show on him at some point in the future. He was another one of these CIA lawyers, just like a guy named Percy Foreman, who we will be talking about a little later on today. Bernard Fensterwald was actually the lawyer for he has been at different times in his life a counsel for Clay Shaw. He was a counsel for Jean-Pierre Lafitte. Basically, CIA guys get in trouble and they seem to use the same lawyers over and over and over again. Bernard Fensterwald Jr. also was a Jewish Zionist who had plentiful connections directly to Israel. He acted on behalf of Israel many times. And he is one of these people who is a key link between the CIA and the Mossad. You'll find that the lawyers the CIA uses oftentimes are the same lawyers that the Mossad uses. And so those tend to be the go-betweens. One particular one in the Kennedy assassination was a guy named Mario Broad. Mario Broad was recruited into the OSS by James Angleton. He went on to be a lawyer for Sam Giancana, and he was the go-between between the CIA and the mob in Chicago. So these lawyers who represent the CIA, they really are probably, they're some of the biggest scumbags ever. So I'm going to move on to basically what he says here is the link between the Kennedy assassination and the Martin Luther King assassination is based on a photograph of a gentleman taken in Dealey Plaza. You will come to know him as the Short Tramp. Fundamentally, the link comes from James Earl Ray. And James Earl Ray actually identified the Short Tramp as Raul. Now, this is very significant because I believe that I have identified Raul and the Short Tramp. In this letter here, this is from Penn Jones. Penn Jones was one of the original JFK assassination investigators, wrote a bunch of books, did a lot of investigation. However, when you read through like this letter in particular, he's trying to steer James Earl Ray into identifying a guy named, I believe it was Fred Lee Chrisman. I believe he was trying to get him to identify Chrisman as the Short Tramp, but Chrisman was most certainly not the Short Tramp. And so basically this letter here is the proof or an indication at least, that James Earl Ray had identified the short tramp as Raoul. Now, Raoul was allegedly the guy who set up James Earl Ray. Now, through my investigations into John F. Kennedy's assassination, I determined that the short tramp was a guy named Vincent Caltagirone Jr. Now, if you see the picture on the right, these tramps in every photograph are obscuring their faces. You can see he's pushing out his lower jaw. He's scrunching his eyebrows. You know, they're making faces the entire time so as to obscure photographs. And unfortunately, because of that, I have not been able to get a positive facial recognition match. I think I got a 67%, but I attribute that to the obfuscation of the face. When I took these photographs and put them into Photoshop, and I have about a dozen more photos of Vincent Caltagirone Jr. from all kinds of angles, and I spent 20-30 hours probably just comparing the two pictures, you can tell that the ears are exactly a match, the nose and the lips are exactly a match, the chin is a match. I've concluded 99.9% that the short tramp is actually Vincent Caltagirone Jr. Now, who is Vincent Caltagirone Jr.? This is going to be an extremely abbreviated explanation of the Winterland Ice Rink, which is the ice rink involved with David Ferry. Allegedly, David Ferry drove to this ice rink the day after the assassination and went ice skating. That story is a complete lie. I've talked about it numerous times. We will discuss it again in the future. But in a nutshell, the ice skating rink that David Ferry went to was owned and operated by the Johnson Family Enterprise, which was Lyndon Johnson's company, and it was leased to a woman named Mary Boots Roberts White. Now, Mary Boots Roberts White, her birth name was Mary Caltagirone. Mary Caltagirone's first cousin was Vincent Caltagirone Jr., the person who I believe was the short tramp. Now, Vincent Caltagirone Jr. also just so happened to be married to a woman named Lorraine Valenti, who went on to be Lorraine Valenti Dinerstein. Now, that is the sister of Jack Valenti. And Jack Valenti, who went on to run the Motion Picture Association of America, Jack Valenti, who I believe was the primary shooter on the grassy knoll, he also was the right-hand man of Lyndon Johnson. And Lyndon Johnson was the owner of the Johnson Family Enterprise. So there's a loop here of interaction between Lyndon Johnson, Mary Caltagirone, Vincent Caltagirone Jr., and Jack Valenti. And this, I believe, is pretty much the proof that the Winterland itself was used as a front for the CIA. And I have a lot of proof behind the relationship between Vincent Caltagirone and Lorraine Valenti. This is just one here from the Jack Valenti file, where they wrote Vincent in the column in relation to Lorraine Dinerstein. Also, they both have kids named Thomas. They both have a son named Thomas Caltagirone, who has a wife named Lou. So yes, they were absolutely married, and there's a lot more documentation on that. Now, I'm going to skip to a guy named Percy Forman. Percy Forman is another one of these CIA / mob lawyers, and he was based out of Houston, and he had defended James Earl Ray at one point. I believe he had taken over after James Earl Ray fired his initial lawyers. And ultimately, Percy Forman, according to James Earl Ray, pressured him into taking a deal, saying that if he didn't take a deal, he would get the electric chair. So Mr. Forman persuaded Ray to plead guilty to the 1968 slaying of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., the Nobel Prize winning civil rights leader, in exchange for a 99-year sentence. Ray charged later that Mr. Forman pressured him into the plea by saying odds were 99% he would go to the electric chair if he faced a jury. Ray contended he only purchased the rifle used in Memphis in the Memphis assassination and gave it to a man named Raoul. He later said that Forman failed to investigate two mysterious Louisiana men, he contended, who would have helped his case. But Mr. Forman testified before a U.S. House Assassinations Committee in 78 that Ray admitted to him that he faked the story of a conspiracy and thought the killing would make him a hero to the white race. Now, we know that that statement is absolutely false because, number one, Mr. Forman's a lawyer, and number two, he works for the CIA. So you cannot trust the damn thing out of his mouth. So Mr. Forman also had briefly represented Jack Ruby, who was given the death penalty for shooting death of Lee Harvey Oswald, the man suspected of murdering President Kennedy on November 22nd. As his motorcade left Dallas, Ruby died in prison. Mr. Forman agreed to take the case, but he dropped Ruby as a client 1 week later. After that, as you should all know, Jack Ruby was then represented by Melvin Belli, who was a very close personal friend of Menachem Begin and Mickey Cohen. So let me go ahead and move on. Now, so what we've established so far is that Percy Forman was James Earl Ray's lawyer who pressured him into taking a deal. Okay. We've also established that James Earl Ray identified the short tramp as Raoul. So we have another piece of this puzzle with a woman named Glenda Grabo. And fundamentally, this clip here is taken from Gerald Posner's book. I kind of put this slide together last minute. I have a bunch more screenshots and data from this incident. But in a nutshell, Glenda Grabo was a woman who came forward in the 1970s. She stated that in the early 1960s, she had been sexually trafficked when she was 14 years old by Raoul, Jack Ruby, and Jack Valente. She said that she was raped by both Jack Ruby and by Jack Valente and forced to make child porn. She says that, that Raoul was also involved with this. Later on, let me see if I can read this one here. As for the King assassination, she gives different versions throughout the tape. She repeats the story that Pepper relates in his book that Raoul stomped on a keychain with King's picture, but adds the words, "I killed this black so-and-so and I'll do it again. Do I have to kill him again?" Only on her third rendition. Also, Grabo says that Raoul admitted to her he was at the scene of the King murder and that he tripped over a mimosa tree. So what we have here is a woman named Glenda Grabo who claims to know Raoul, claims that Raoul had made statements to her that he was going to make $1 million with Jack Valente. Let me read this part to you. At other points in her astonishing story, she claimed Jack Ruby molested her once in a car and that he was involved in Lolita films and books with Raoul and Jack Valente, the current head of the Motion Picture Association of America. He, Raoul, said he wanted to make $1 million with Jack Valente, she said. Jack Ruby actually produced the books according to her, and she was even photographed nude when she was only 14. In the late 60s and 70s, I used to take Raoul and drop him off at the Alabama Theater. Alabama Theater, very important. Alabama Theater was in the same chain as the Texas Theater and the Horowitz Theater, which Jack Valente used to work at when he was 17 or 18 down in Houston. So you have all these different connections here, right? And things that she says that are, to me, I believe her story, and I'll tell you why. Because she says things like she dropped him off at the Alabama Theater. She would have absolutely no understanding that the Alabama Theater would be part of a chain of theaters utilized by these other people, right? She did not know that Howard Hughes owned the Texas Theater and that it was directly connected to the Alabama Theater or that it was connected to the Horowitz Theater, where we have Jack Ruby and Oswald in the Texas Theater when Oswald's arrested, right? And so then you have Vincent Caltagirone or Raoul frequenting the Alabama Theater and Jack Valente, who was an employee of the Horowitz Theater. And these three were all in one chain. This is not coincidence. So when she says things like this, to me, it gives credence to her story because she would have no idea of the implications of what she's saying. But I do. So therefore, I see, you know, that she is actually telling an inadvertent truth here, which absolutely connects to other supporting aspects of the story. So now let's fast forward to 1966. There was a murder of a very famous man. He was a rich guy down in Miami. His name was Mosler. And so Mosler gets murdered. He's stabbed like 50 something times. And so his wife, Candy, who was like 20 or 30 years younger than him, and her boyfriend were arrested and charged in the murder. So they get most of the way through this murder trial. It's looking like pretty bad for Candy and her boyfriend. You know, the guy was gay. He didn't care what she did. He needed a trophy wife. That was kind of the relationship they had. And so, because back then, remember, it was still illegal to be gay in the 60s. So about towards the end of the trial, it then turns out that Vincent Caltagirone Jr. is the roommate of this guy, Mosler, who was married to Candy. And thus, this is what the trial is basically all about. So here you have a connection to a murder by Vincent Caltagirone Jr. And here is the absolute best part. Vincent Caltagirone Jr.'s lawyer was Percy Forman, the same guy who represented James Earl Ray. Now, James Earl Ray had also, Percy Forman had told Glenda Grabo kind of off the record that he had known the real Raoul for many years. Okay. So we have Vincent Caltagirone Jr., who I've already demonstrated the link to Jack Valente. I've, you know, shown that I believe he is the short tramp. All the statements made by Grabo involving Jack Valente, they all connect once you plug in the identity of Vincent Caltagirone Jr. as Raul. When you plug in the identity of Vincent Caltagirone Jr. as Raul, all the statements that he made to her about making $1 million with Jack Valente, that all starts to click. So fast forward to the 1970s when Grabo's lawyer is investigating this, they get who they know to be the real Raul on the phone, okay? So they get Raul on the phone. She asks him, Glenda Grabo asks Raul, have you seen Jack Valente lately? And then Raul gets very mad and he says, no, I haven't seen him in a long time. Why are you asking about him? Okay. So this corresponds with the relationship between Vincent Caltagirone and Jack Valente, right? And so I believe that when JFK got killed, Jack Valente was the shooter on the Knoll. Vincent Caltagirone, who was the short tramp, I believe was his backup guy. Now, why would I believe that Jack Valente had anything to do with the assassination of Martin Luther King? Well, I feel that I have shown a pretty good case that Vincent Caltagirone Jr. is Raul, that he was the short tramp. I can outline all the connections between him, the Winterland Ice Rink, Jack Valente, and the president, the whole nine yards, right? And so the one piece of information that I read in a newspaper article, which you're not going to find in any book about Martin Luther King, you're not going to find in any of the forums or anything like that, I found in a newspaper article immediately after, the day after the assassination, coming out of the motel that James Earl Ray allegedly shot Martin Luther King from, arrested was a short, white, balding man who was then taken to a federal building in Memphis. And that is where the story ends. There's no record of his arrest. There's no record of anything. It was in all the newspapers the next day. And then that information just vanished, which tells me it is key. Now, could it have been Vincent Caltagirone? Sure. Could it have been Jack Valente? And I'm going to say wholeheartedly, yes. What I need to do at this point is I need to find out where the hell Jack Valente was. I need to research Jack Valente's statements on Martin Luther King. And why would I think that Jack Valente is here with Vincent Caltagirone? Because Vincent Caltagirone was his spotter on the Knoll. And then he later gets arrested as one of the tramps, you know, as they're trying to flee in a grain car. But these guys tend to always have a backup who they can trust, who they know and they trust. And if Jack Valente is going to shoot the president and have Vincent Caltagirone as his backup on the Knoll, I would expect that the same relationship carried forward and that if Vincent Caltagirone or Raul was actually working with another man, because Raul was not the shooter. Raul was a setup guy, right? And that's how I feel about Vincent Caltagirone in general, is that he was not a sniper. He was a support guy. So if he was the support guy and he was working with somebody who he knew and trusted and who he would work the Kennedy assassination with, who would that be? That would be none other than Jack Valente, which coincidentally, I guess, matches the description of the short, balding white man arrested outside the motel when he was killed. And so when another thing I wanted to point out here, I thought this was rather interesting, is that Caltagirone named a trial quits bank. He was working for some bank and he actually had been promoted and he had a good salary. And this was in Miami. But then when you go and you look at his obituary, you know, you're back to, you know, he graduated from high school. He went to Texas A&M University. He enlisted in the Navy. Upon discharge, he got his bachelor's degree from the University of Houston. And then he was followed by 35 years in the insurance business. Well, obviously that's not true, because he was working at a bank in Miami. Okay, so why is he working at a bank in Miami, but his obituary says he sold insurance for 35 years? Because this guy was intelligence all the way. He was a member of the National YMCA Scuba Program, which corresponds also to Jack Valente, who sat on the national board of the YMCA. And how many times does YMCA pop up in the Kennedy assassination? A ton. How many times did Oswald stay at a YMCA? A ton. How many times did some of these other guys like Lawrence Howard and Lauren Hall stay at YMCAs? A lot. I think there's a direct connection there as well. But that, I believe, will wrap it up. That is the path that I need to go down to really kind of confirm that my hypothesis that Jack Valente shot Martin Luther King as well. And I believe I have a solid foundation to work from. But just note, these are not conclusions. These are the suspicions I have. But usually when I have a suspicion, I'm generally 80% of the time, 90% of the time, I'm correct. So that will do it for this. And happy Martin Luther King Day, everyone.
Yes. I think if anything, this research shows, would you mind meeting, that there's a connection between the same players.
You're going to have to end screen share and mute me.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah, like I was saying, that if anything, that this research shows that there's a definite connection to the same players throughout history in these assassination and NOPs. And it's a really good start. So good job there. And I think that's all we're going to have for you for today. We do have another show tonight. I will be talking with Ryder Lee from Raised by Giants. So tune into that later. And like I said, check us out Beyond Classified on Rockfin. It is our new premium platform. Amazing content creators there already. By the likes of Charlie Robinson, Sam Tripoli. Who else I have on Rockfin?
Yeah, let me talk about Rockfin for a minute. Rockfin, so we've been building our own platform for months, and we've been having a lot of trouble because it's very complicated. And as I'm building this thing, Rockfin kind of pops up, and they had kind of done what idea that I had kind of come up with. I came up with the idea of getting a whole bunch of content creators together, having a premium platform that they could all not worry about censorship. And then, you pay a monthly subscription price, and then it pays all the different content creators on the back end. Well, Rockfin went ahead and did that. And so far, they have everybody. They got Jimmy Dore. They got Lee Camp. They got all the big guys you'd expect in independent media. They got, like Chris said, they got Sam Tripoli. It's an amazing platform, really. And it's one of the only avenues that we have to actually make any money. Because honestly, we don't have any jobs. We're doing this thing full time now, right? So we're busting our ass every single day to try to come up with the best content and to do research and to really, try to let people know what's really going on in this world. And the best way to really support us is to go get a subscription over at Rockfin. When you sign up, you get to choose us as the content creator whom you signed up for. And for $10 a month, you get access to our premium and everybody else's premium on the platform. All those guys we talked about. So really, it's an amazing value. And I think everybody needs to go. And if you want to support Forbidden Knowledge News, that's the best way to do it right now. Besides going right now over to ForbiddenKnowledge.news and buying a ticket for the upcoming FKNCon 2021. We have pre-sale tickets on now right now for $29. And definitely go over and pick one up.
Yep, you took the words out of my mouth. Definitely go to the website. We have 12 extraordinary presenters. I don't have the list in front of me. It is on the website. You will not be disappointed. We have a couple of ads out, promotional ads that show all the presenters out, and I will be making another announcement about it tonight. But please go to ForbiddenKnowledge.news and check it out. You won't want to miss this awesome event. It's going to be another, just like last year, one-of-a-kind online event, and 12 presenters that you know, and you're going to be very, very happy to see presenting some brand new information. So until tonight, we will talk later, and everyone have an excellent evening.